Today on Maine Calling, how music shapes our brains. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know. You likely have a favorite song or piece of music, that tune that just changes your mood for the better, no matter how often you hear it. The impact is real. Music affects our brain. It can cheer us up, soothe us, or motivate us. It also has the power to heal and is increasingly used to help people with a wide variety of challenges: depression, PTSD, brain injury, autism, and more. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about the science of music therapy. It can involve listening to music, but also singing or playing an instrument. Music and well-being next on Maine Calling. That's just ahead. You never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maybe you listen to music while you exercise or cook dinner, or maybe you sing in the shower. Music is a part of our lives, even when we are not musicians, but for some, it can be more than that. It can be a powerful tool for healing and well-being. For Mental Health Awareness Month, we are going to learn about the use of music in treating people who struggle with mental health issues and many other challenges, especially things like brain injury. Joining me today, Kate Beaver, who is a musician and music psychotherapist, and she is the owner of Maine Music and Health. Also with us, Dan Wenger, who is a music therapist with Midcoast Music Academy. He's also a musician. We invite you to join the conversation. Does singing, playing, or listening to certain kinds of music help you? Does it calm you down, energize you? Or do you know someone with health issues who has turned to music therapy for help? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Dan and Kate, welcome both of you to Maine Calling. And Kate, you know, it was 10 years ago that I first met you, and I'm so excited because that story was very impactful for me. I went out with Kate on a story where she was working with a man who had not spoken for decades, because he'd had a brain injury as a child. And through singing together, he began to speak. I still think about that story, Kate. And I'm wondering, you're nodding. Is that, for me, it was very impactful. For you, is that usual? Do you see transformations like that all the time?
I do. I think we all do. And it's, but it sticks with you. It also, you know, every person I work with is different, and they remain strong memories for me. And he was such a special, you know, delightful person that was so excited to be on TV too. So yeah, it's a happy memory, but that kind of change we see every day or every week. And sometimes it's quick and sometimes it's slow, but it's a fun way to see progress.
How does that work though? How can somebody who has not been able to speak start to be able to speak because of music? What's going on in your brain? And you know, in as simple terms as possible.
Simple terms as possible. The most simple way to explain it is that music, engaging in music, is using more of your brain than if you're just speaking or just taking a step, or just, you know, having a conversation with someone. So when you're helping somebody who hasn't been able to speak start trying to regain speech, adding melody and also the emotional qualities of favorite songs or the memories associated with them, that's kind of lighting up different areas of your brain than just the speech area. And so when you hear neurologists talk about neuroplasticity and physically healing the brain, that can happen just by engaging in music.
Dan, go ahead.
Speech therapists have been doing that for ages, so it's just a continuation of that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, Dan, so the person we were just talking about, Kate and myself, had a brain injury, and I know that many brain injury survivors are people who benefit from music therapy. Who else? Who else are you seeing, Dan? Who else are you helping?
Not specifically in the world of brain injury, but I work with folks of all ages, all backgrounds and varying abilities. And for me, I get to see, no matter who the individual is, you know, what's their relationship with music and how can we use that to support specific areas of health or holistic health, depending on what they're going through.
You say depending what they're going through. So what kind of things have you found that music's very helpful with? I mean, are you working with people with things like anxiety and depression?
Absolutely. The folks that I'm working with could be going through developmental stunts in growth. I'm thinking about children who may be non-speaking or non-verbal, and maybe music can support their verbalizing or vocalizing. I'm thinking about folks who are navigating anxiety and depression who come into my office and music helps them find the words. If the words aren't there, maybe we can explore a song that can help, or maybe we can find some sort of musical mood through instruments or through singing or through just honestly talking and recognizing that there's music in the prosodic or the prosody of our voices. I mean, right now I'm sharing rhythms, I'm sharing melody, and it's, you know, it's not the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but it's certainly something that we could use and turn to. This rhythm right here, that right there is something that we can explore, particularly when a client gets into something really meaningful that they're talking about. You know, if that anxiety or depression is related to conflict in a family or trauma or grief, existential concerns, we can explore how they're expressing that in just conversation and explore, okay, maybe we can work that into a musical experience and see what's there, whether it's through the experience or the insight gained from that experience.
Kate, when I first met you 10 years ago, I believe you were one of three music therapists in Maine, and it was really considered pretty cutting edge to be working with, whether it was music therapy or art therapy. Insurance companies may or may not recognize it. Where are we today?
Oh, gosh. I think we have, Dan can help me. Do we have 26 in the state now?
I think it's a little less than that.
A little less, but okay.
Around 20, around 20, yeah. 25. It's fluctuated over the few years I've been here.
Yeah, it's grown a lot. I also just feel like the knowledge around the benefits of music have grown. So not just the growth of like our specific field, but I just feel like people are becoming more aware of the benefits of engaging in music in some way, like community music making and singing in groups, and just a little more openness to it, which is nice.
Yeah. Okay. So Kate, and I'm going to ask both of you this, when a patient or a client comes to you, how do you decide what might be the best way to help them? When do you pull out your guitar and sing with them? When do you suggest something for them to listen to? We can play music, we can sing music, we can listen to music, we can hum or whistle. Mm-hmm. How do you determine how to help a person who comes to you, Kate?
That's a great question. I think the word Dan used, holistic health, is such a great sort of approach that hopefully we all have, but you meet somebody where they are. So sometimes I'll get a referral from a neurologist or a speech therapist. Sometimes I'll get a self-referral, or a family member will say, hey, this might help, you know, someone with early Alzheimer's or someone with a mood disorder. And I try to just get to know them in the music first, because that's often the place that someone can express themselves the best, when they don't have the words or don't know the right words to describe how they're feeling or what they're going through. So I usually introduce a multitude of instruments. I'm a percussionist, so I'm a little bit biased in that, but I also think a lot of our brain's connection to music is through the rhythm. So I bring out a lot of percussion instruments, piano, which gives a lot of harmonic expression, and then guitar, which is really portable. So when I'm in the hospital, I carry a guitar around. And I usually just ask someone, what's your favorite song, or what have you been listening to lately? And that can open such a floodgate of information about that person that kind of acts as an assessment of some kind. And then I can figure out, like, well, are they open to singing, or should we build a little bit more trust before trying to get their maybe through some drumming exercises or listening to music together and talking about the lyrics.
Dan, is there a certain kind of music that is more helpful, do you find, than others? Is there a certain speed of the rhythm or a certain a genre that you turn to again and again?
I think the short answer is actually absolutely not. I think as music therapists, we like Kate's describing, we apply the ISO principle. We try to match the mood of the client or the affect that they're sharing, and again, meet them in the moment. And I think it's really, it can even be considered dangerous or harmful to a client to prescribe a song or a music that isn't thoroughly understood within the relationship, the context of the therapeutic relationship. If I don't understand that, a minor second, you know, an A and a B flat played together could lead to some negative associations. And I can give a wonderful example. I'm so glad I'm accessing this now. I was in a Parkinson's support group. I was giving not a presentation, but actually more of a discussion. And somebody was asking about expression of pain. And we talked about a few possible ways of expressing that, one of which was this tight, tense note, two notes put together that don't really harmonize very well. They sound dissonant, they sound crunchy, tense, not resolved. And that, to me, was a decent expression of pain, chronic pain, something like that. And it was worth a shot. So I played that in the room and I watched the faces on the attendees go, oh goodness, scrunch up and really have a visceral response. One person even raised their hand and said, hey, you got to be careful with that. That sounds like the violins in Psycho, the Alfred Hitchcock film. Mm-hmm. So that's just to illustrate the point that we all have these really powerful associations with music. And I think the best thing that a music therapist can do when they're meeting a client is really try to understand the relationship that client has with music. I think to break it down a little bit more too, you're asking like, how do we decide what kind of music to share? And I often go to the four methods of music therapy, or four ways of being in music. Improvisation, spontaneous creation of music, and that can be with a reference point or not. So we can improvise about a story, improvise through a story, improvise a feeling, or we can just freely improvise and see what comes up from that. Which is similar to free association in a psychoanalytic context. Just what's the first thing that comes to your mind? What's the first thing you want to play and see where that takes us? So improvisation is one method. Recreating familiar songs or sounds, the recreative method. Listening, receptive methods, taking in music for all of the many different reasons we might, imaging, relaxation, song analysis or song discussion and lyric analysis. And the last one would be composition. So the idea of preparing, notating, creating music to be played in the future.
I'm going to pull out one thing you said, which is talking about the familiar. And it reminded me, I've been told by people who, more than once, by people who work at or run nursing homes, that often they will bring out some of the people who live there on a Friday afternoon to listen to Toby LaBoudelier's program here on Maine Public Radio, Down Memory Lane, where Toby plays the number one hits from different decades throughout the 20th century. And I've been told that people who really are not very active, maybe even don't seem to be engaged at all, will come to life when they hear music from their generation. And so we're going to play a clip here of a very beloved older song and sort of talk about that concept. This is Doris Day.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
So, Kate, obviously for a lot of people that wouldn't be something you would use, but for other clients, for other patients, something like that, an upbeat Doris Day song, old song, will be really meaningful and helpful. Tell us how, you know, if somebody, how old would somebody have been when they heard that song to have it be something that imprinted in their brain in that kind of way?
First of all, I love that radio show, and I'm not in my 80s, but he has such a delightful speaking voice, too, that I just love hearing him introduce the songs and eras. But yeah, they say around 18 to 25 or 30 is when the most salient musical memories are sort of encoded in our hippocampus. And that encoding happens because we have this connection between like the structure of music and the harmonic expectations that resolve and release dopamine, and then also the memories associated. And when you're, you know, 18 to your early 20s, you're really getting into human development, and like some of the strongest life changes happen then, typically. That's kind of generalizing. So we try to pull music from that area. Like right now, a lot of people in memory care facilities had the great fortune to be young during the 60s and 70s, which I think is like some of the most fun popular music. So yeah, just kind of pulling from that. I also think Everyone Knows You Are My Sunshine. Like little kids still sing that song. So it's a pretty, good one to pull up. I don't know if Dan has.
Dan, so go ahead.
I can definitely, this world of music in memory care context. That's kind of how I got my start, I suppose, in the world of music and wellness. I had been taking a music and medicine course at Ithaca College, and part of the course requirements were to go to a nursing facility in the area and to play music for the residents, play music really for the residents, not with the residents, just going to highlight that nuance there. And I would go to this facility with a friend of mine, who's a very talented bass player, and I'd bring my trombone and my voice, and we would play familiar songs. You Are My Sunshine was absolutely on that list. In that time, I got to know someone who was suffering from agoraphobia, having a really difficult time making it out of their space of comfort, which at this point was really just a single bed nursing facility space room. In bed, looking out the window for months at a time, really not engaging with others. And I got to know this person over 2-3 weeks, playing music for them, playing their favorite songs, getting to know what their favorite songs were. And one day, the bass player and I were on our way up, and we stopped in the hallway because we were, I almost want to say, accosted by a few residents who were, they wanted music and they wanted it now. So we chose to play Summertime, which was one of the residents' favorite songs. And we were planning on playing it again when we got to her room, but she actually requested to come out and to see this woman making their way down the hall after knowing how difficult that is for them. And all I had to do was play their favorite song. Something in my mind couldn't just let that go. And I ended up pursuing music therapy shortly after that. It was just so impactful for me.
Wow. Well, we are talking about music and well-being on Maine Calling. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we are learning about the impact music has on the brain and on mental health and other health challenges. My guests are both musicians and are both music therapists. Dan Wenger is with Midcoast Music Academy and Kate Beaver with Maine Music and Health. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Dr. Richard Riker, who is a critical care physician with Maine Medical Center. Thanks so much for calling in, Dr. Riker.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here with you and Kate and Dan.
Tell us how you use music in the ICU.
Well, we've worked with Kate a little bit in trying to find ways to apply ICU music. I was fortunate enough a few years ago to be part of a group writing guidelines for sedation and pain treatment in the ICU. And one of the issues we addressed was, what is the role for music? And it's so difficult to prove scientifically that music works, even if we observe things that really look quite striking. A few weeks ago, we had a patient who had had an ischemic stroke to their brain from not having enough blood flow and was not able to speak, something we call aphasia. And his daughter was with him and put The Gambler by Kenny Rogers on and sang it with him, and he started singing. And for probably 20 or 30 minutes after that, he was able to speak some, and then that gradually went away. But I think it was a striking evidence to me. I've not seen that before, as Kate had described. There are a lot of different applications for music potentially in the ICU to help relieve pain, improve sleep. It's been shown to be helpful. Something we call delirium, which is a confusion state that happens often in the ICU. Different types of music have been shown to be beneficial for that. So I think there are many applications that we're still learning how they might be beneficial in the ICU.
That's what I was going to ask you. It sounds as though you are pretty convinced that it is beneficial, but still learning a great deal.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, as Dan mentioned earlier, you know, the selection of the kind of music is one of the most difficult things. You know, is it going to be a live harp being played, or recorded music, or birdsong, or ocean waves? And if it's going to be music, what kind of music? Upbeat, slow tempo? Depending on what we're trying to accomplish, there may be different things. And then it gets even more complicated. How intense do you do it? Is it 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour? Is it once a day, three times a week? So these are the things we're still trying to figure out.
I was thinking, as you said, harp music or something. You got to make sure you don't put something on that's going to drive the patient crazy, right?
Yeah, very true. I think, you know, Dan's point that, you know, without fully understanding, it's possible you may rekindle emotion that you don't want to. So,
oh, my goodness. Well, before we let you go, it is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm wondering if you have any examples or any research you want to tell us about the connection between music and improving mental health.
Well, I think in a broader sense, again, as an intensive care physician, I'm kind of bound into those areas of practice. But mm-hmm. I think delirium and post-traumatic stress disorder are two areas that are common in the intensive care unit population. And I think there's definitely been ongoing work that music can improve both of those conditions.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to call in, Dr. Richard Riker with Critical Care Services at Maine Medical Center. We have so many emails and Facebook posts coming in here. Lorraine on Facebook says, I keep relaxation music in my home most days. It's calming. In addition, I love a variety of music from my early youth, the post-World War II era, big bands and crooners. Andrew on Facebook writes, a Charlie Brown Christmas always helps me any time of the year. And Andrew, I share your love for that. And Kelly also writes, I listen to Christmas music when I'm having a rough time. Regardless of the time of year, it always helps. So two people recommending Christmas music even here in May. Wondering if that surprises you.
Not really. I think that makes sense. For a lot of people, the holiday season is such a warm time. I can imagine just the association of, you know, family, warm fire, Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. That to me sounds like that's the first association that came up for me when I think about Christmas music. Yeah, memorable great. Melodies, that familiarity that comes from those songs, it totally makes sense to me.
We'll go to Eve calling from Saco. Oh, I'm sorry, Kate. Eve, hold on. Kate, go on. Jump in.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think one of the things I think has been interesting in healthcare settings is suggesting these sort of personalized playlists that families can make, you know, prior to someone getting sick or losing their memory, that kind of have like a life story through the playlist. Like, what are songs you remember from childhood and your teen years and your wedding song and your prom song? So that when you get to the point, which hopefully many people don't have this experience, but of being in the ICU, that we can share songs that might have that, you know, memory attached to them. Because otherwise, like Dr. Riker said, you know, there's a lot of information and research about how melodic music increases dopamine and endorphins are released from this emotional burst, but we don't always know which songs are going to do that, and it's hard to make guesses for someone who can't choose.
We'll go to Eve, who's calling from Saco. Hi, Eve.
Hi, Jennifer. I just wanted to make everyone aware of a documentary called Alive Inside. It's absolutely fabulous, and it's centered around today's topic and discussion. It's by Geralyn White Dreyfus, and you can Google that, and it'll come up. But I can, you know, I can't. We've shown it at our church. We've shown it at our community center, and it's a great documentary based on a nursing home with a lot of dementia and Alzheimer's situations, people who haven't spoken for years. And this gal went in with a tape recorder and some old tapes, played music, and they literally came alive. One
Yeah,
man
well, Eve,
spoke.
thank you for telling us about that. And our guests are smiling. Kate, you know the documentary.
I've actually still never seen it, but I've had three different people send me a copy of the DVD. I just don't have a DVD player, but I've heard a lot about it, and it's related to the program that is bringing headphones and iPods into memory care facilities. And I think there's such a benefit to that, as long as, like we've been saying, it's music that we know is related to the person that we're playing it for. But otherwise, you're putting headphones on someone and further isolating them and hoping they like the songs.
Eve, thank you so much for your call. Al on Facebook writes, "I listen to choral music from the Renaissance and beyond, not
Wow.
opera, not soloistic, never in a language I understand easily through the treatment of the words." And so that is very different than the people who are listening to Christmas music. And that reminds me that, you know, a few years ago, Kate, there was a big phase where it was popular to play classical music, Mozart in particular, to babies, supposed to foster their brain development. Well, listen to a bit of Mozart and then talk about that idea. All right, Kate, as you listen to that Mozart right there, what do you want to tell us about the connection with classical music and mental health? I'm guessing that for some people that was just a wonderful little interlude, and for some others it was not.
Well said. My undergrad was in classical percussion, so I do, you know, appreciate some classical music, but I think there's a misunderstanding about what classical music is. And I think if you just put on a playlist, you know, if you search Spotify for classical music, you might get Mahler's Third, which could be really upsetting to hear, or Barber's Adagio for strings, which could be, you know, induce a real sense of depression. So it's not, you know, I'm not sure about the research about brain development in infants, but I think classical music, you really have to know what goal you're looking to achieve, and then know the music well enough to figure out like what's going to work for you. And again, it depends on the person. You know, I have people that do breathing exercises to AC/DC and they feel more relaxed. So it's kind of dependent on the song, I think.
I may that really reminds me of an old college roommate who's a wonderful bass player who would fall asleep to heavy metal music, and I could hear it through the wall how loud it was. But I mean, that really goes to show the nuance of, like, you know, everyone has their relationship with music, and He was testing the limits of my understanding of that.
We'll go to Carol calling from Brunswick. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. Kate played with First Parish Church in Brunswick in our spring concert, and I recently saw her perform in Brunswick, the Oratorio Chorale Growing Up Maine. Kate, I came up and spoke with you after the concert. And I love her drumming, and I have a djembe from West Africa and would love to use it more. And I noticed in the bio in the Oratorio Chorale program that you had done some work with the Dempsey Center in the past, and I am a cancer survivor, and I would love to see you do something with the Dempsey Center. Drumming is just so healing and stress relieving, and it's just really wonderful, and your performances are just fabulous. So thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Carol. Thank you so much. Kate, the days need to have more than 24 hours, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, there's actually some fascinating research. And again, like Dr. Riker said, hard to prove. Music therapy does not have the budget of, you know, pharmaceutical companies. So our studies are often pretty small sample size. But there's actually some research that shows that group drumming increases our natural killer cells. So the cells that fight cancer and actually improve our immune system, which is just... you know, even if the research isn't strong enough, it gives me some sense of hope. And at the very least, if people enjoy drumming, there's no harm in it. You know, they're also just building community and having this social experience. So I'm a big fan.
Well, Carol, thanks so much for your call. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about people who maybe have dementia or have had a stroke or have PTSD or depression. But what about, Dan, for the rest of us? I read recently that it's impossible to be in a bad mood if you're humming. And I don't know if that's been proven or something like that, but it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I
almost, angry I know, is the humming?
That's right. That's kind of where my head is going.
I was going to say, can you do angry humming?
I'm thinking about the individual who might like self-soothe by humming, mm-hmm. too. Like the anxious individual who may carry a song with them to soothe themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's a tool for regulation almost, or just an affirmation of I'm right here and this is where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. What about the person, Kate, who starts you know, and I know some of these people, I live with one of them, who starts the day by putting on some, you know, upbeat music in the shower, as loud as possible. A lot of speakers now are waterproof, so people can take them into the shower with them. Is that a good way to start your day?
I do always ask. I never ask people if they sing anymore. I ask, are you a car singer or a shower singer? Because everyone is something. But yeah, I think Dan mentioned the ISO principle earlier. In the ICU, we call it the entrainment factor. So in training our body rhythms to music, you kind of can't meet a certain energy with the opposite in music. That won't necessarily work. You kind of have to meet your own energy and then adjust accordingly. That's, I guess, a good way to describe the ISO principle. So I often will suggest people make playlists that kind of slowly shift their energy to be either in a better mood or, you know, more hyperactive, whatever the need is. You kind of have to meet yourself first.
And of course, we always see, you know, I think about when you're watching the Olympics and you always see the swimmers sitting in the track stars who have their headphones on and they're listening to music before they perform. So obviously that there's some evidence in that music maybe helps them shut out the noise, but also get in the mood.
Yep. And runners too, you can I've tried this, it didn't work for me, but I'm not really a runner, but choosing music that kind of matches the pace that you want to be running at to try to energize your body, because it does click into that motor system. So it might work.
That reminds me of Oliver Sacks's story. He's associated with Alive Inside at Beth Israel. He broke his leg climbing down a mountain and he was alone and he just hummed or sang Beethoven's Fifth to get the rhythm and let that drive his descent. And he was able to kind of reframe the experience instead of this painful thing as this, I'm on a journey and I need to get home. And this song is going to help me do that.
We're speaking with two musicians and music therapists about the power of music. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we are talking about how music interacts and can affect the brain. Joining me, Kate Beaver, who's a music psychotherapist with Maine Music and Health, and Dan Wenger, a music therapist with Midcoast Music Academy. Send us your thoughts or questions. The board's pretty full, but you could try to get through. 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Amy Stacy Curtis. You may know her name. She's an installation artist and musician, and her works have, over the years, taken over old mills in Maine and taken on all sorts of really interesting themes. But Amy has more recently been recovering from a brain injury, and just this month was the winner of Maine's Got Talent. Amy, thank you so much for calling in, and so nice to hear from you.
You too. It's really nice to talk to you again, Jennifer.
Amy, congratulations on winning Maine's Got Talent. This is even more significant than it might be for some other people, because since not long ago you were even having trouble speaking, much less singing on stage. Tell us about your brain injury and how you use music to help yourself heal.
Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story a little bit. In 2017, I had a brain injury that was caused by Lyme disease that was never treated. And I, over the course of 6 years, after, first of all, not knowing for a long time what was wrong, was able to progress from wheelchair to walker to cane, back to my feet, but was still struggling to speak. I had lost the ability to be understandable. I was very, very palsied, or sometimes just completely nonverbal, like the connection between my brain and my mouth had been cut. And after the 6 years of that initial progression with my body, I had lost all control of my muscles, including the muscles in my face. I intuited after I got back on my feet, after being frustrated, still not being able to talk, I wondered if learning to do or practicing doing something that required multiple tasks at the same time could help help my speech. And after a week of playing the ukulele, I was able to speak normal for me for the first time in 6 years in an ongoing way, and less overstimulated. So I'm a little palsied right now because I'm calling a new show, and it's stimulating, like extra stimulating. Otherwise, thanks to the ukulele, my speech is completely normal. And then the more stimulated that I am, like if I'm on stage or at Maine Sky Talent, I'm extra palsied. But as soon as I start to play the ukulele, my brain snaps into place and I sing as I would speak normally because of the ukulele. So well, every brain is just so different.
Well, I've seen the clip of you playing, and it's just wonderful, Amy, and I'm so happy for you. But you just figured this out on your own.
I've had to intuit a lot of things. There are some programs that weren't available to me. And I had to kind of figure some things out on my own. And I'm really glad that I've come as far as I have. I feel like I got a second chance for sure. And I'm just really appreciative to even be here. It's awesome. I'm just really glad.
Well, I'm so glad to hear from you. Amy Stacy Curtis, artist and musician, and now the winner of Maine's Got Talent. Kate, as you hear Amy's story, I bet you're not surprised.
No, but it was making me a little emotional. Just congratulations, Amy. It's hard to hear too, like that people have to kind of figure things out themselves. And that's another reason I know doctors are hesitant to recommend things that maybe don't have enough evidence for sort of healthcare coverage. But music is such an accessible and enjoyable thing that's available to all humans and animals. So I'm just really happy to hear that Amy kind of like thought to try that and then had such a great benefit. And I appreciate that she said, you know, everyone with a brain injury is different, because that's also true. The idea of getting on stage, you know, that makes me nervous. So it's amazing that you can do that and still have that flow of speech available.
We've got a Carla who's calling from Portland. Hi, Carla. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. What a great subject today. You know, back in the 70s, 1970s, when I first went to college, I majored in music therapy. I think there were three schools on the East Coast at the time. I went to a university in Washington, D.C., and I was very fortunate to have one of the pioneering women, Dr. Helen Bonney, there. She was older at that time, and she did a lot of work with guided imagery and music. But in my senior project was working with pregnant women and using music therapy to, they had to find the pieces of music that made them feel the most relaxed and listen to it every single day and do breathing exercises with that, so that when the time came for them to give birth, the music helped them to just bypass everything and relax their body. You know, so the pain wouldn't be so bad. Now, that was the 1970s. Fast forward to now, there is so much more research that's been done with the brain and the nervous system, and to be able to bypass certain parts of your nervous system if you do things like listen to music and relax with them religiously. I think it's just great. So now if you want to major in music therapy, you're not going to be put with recreation therapy, like I was when I first graduated.
Carla, thanks so much for calling in. And I got a big smile from Kate when you were talking about Dr. Helen Bonney. I'm so interested in your work with pregnant women. Not a surprise, but that's really great. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's see. We'll go to Nancy calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hey, a great show, as usual. And calling about something else, but a comment on what you were saying about music being soothing. Slaves, in fact, when they were working, often had their chants that were repetitious and low and are considered to be soothing melodies, actually, that they used to undergo what they went through. But what I'm calling about is a friend who is on TikTok and Facebook. Her mother has dementia, can't remember what she had for breakfast, but was a concert pianist back in the day, a really superb one. And she plays the piano like just unbelievably. There are good days and not so good days.
Nancy, how interesting. And I'm going to turn to you, Dan. So a patient with dementia who has trouble remembering daily tasks but can still play an instrument. Again, I'm guessing you're not surprised.
No, not
I mean, most of us are blown away by that, but you're like, oh yeah, that's what I see.
We see some pretty extraordinary things every day. I think Kate and I can definitely agree on that. I mean, between folks who are introduced to me as non-verbal or non-speaking, singing, I mean, on the first session or the first time I meet them, and surprising everyone else. I mean, very similarly, I've worked with folks who they would say, in a previous life, I was a pianist and I would never do that again. And they sit at the piano and the muscle memory just comes back. It's not terribly uncommon.
No, and thanks, Nancy. An email here from Peter. Please share with your listeners the importance of music therapy at the end of life. My partner, Lisa Redfern, is a singer-songwriter who has received many messages from individuals and families that listen to her music at the end of the life of a family member or loved one. It is profoundly effective for some to find comfort when nearing the end of life. It is also very moving for Lisa, knowing that she is contributing to a peaceful transition for many. And I'm going to guess that this is like some of the other things that you all have talked about, and Dan, I'll turn back to you, that maybe it is nice to have a conversation with loved ones about what music they like the best and what they would like to have you play.
Absolutely. Hearing, the auditory sense is one of the last senses to go in a typical dying process. And being the individual who can help connect with someone who might be in a disordered state of consciousness but can still hear, that's something I've been able to do in the past. Helping family members connect with that individual even when they feel like they might not be able to, in that kind of place, I've had some really surprising and profound experiences. It's just a really beautiful way of honoring the end of someone's life, to bring them the songs that they cherish and to be in a room with their loved ones, facilitating that final connection.
I'll go to Ann calling from Windham. Hi, Ann, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for the program. It's great. I wanted to mention, as I finished my studies 1980 in therapeutic recreation, I had the good luck of interning with an agency called Community Entertainment, and it was started by Nora and Eli Dale. And what they did is coordinated all volunteer performers to go to nursing homes and Pineland, even the jail. And that was, I think, right about when the real, you know, the value of the therapeutic value of music was starting to be recognized. Now, these facilities, nobody paid their musicians to come in. And I'll say 45 years later, I am semi-retired, but I do continue to play music in assisted living and nursing homes, and I've had some amazing experiences. So, yeah, it's a good thing to do, and I've been so lucky to have had the opportunity to share music in these facilities.
Thank you, Ann. Dan?
That's wonderful to hear. I keep hearing something in the last hour. We're talking about the evidence base for music therapy and proving that this stuff works. And I think there's a tremendous need to demonstrate the efficacy of music therapy services and any service that someone's going to invest their health in. But at the same time, we can also look at the history of music and how music has been around since the beginning of humanity. Again, I have rhythm in my voice. I have melody in my voice. You can think about their theories of language development that are based around music, you know, to calm the infant. Oh, baby. Using the voice in these really meaningful ways. I'd like to say that everyone's musical, and we're really relearning these more ancient ways of being.
Kate?
I totally agree with that. And I always say, it's not that I want to talk myself out of work or a job, but my hope is that this field is meant to sort of get people to circle back to the fact that they are innately musical and can use that as a tool for themselves. And I work a lot in pediatric palliative care, so a lot of that sort of end-of-life music making, and I feel like the best way is to get the family to start singing together, and then I'm able to just kind of become invisible in the room and allow that to happen. I hope if people get anything out of this conversation, I hope it's like, oh, I should maybe regain my musical self.
Go make music. Make music. Be musical.
Mm-hmm. Make it, regain your musical self. And thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to quickly read an email. This is from Alyssa. My late father was an accomplished guitar player, and I finally started learning to play after he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Music was a profound way to spend time with him and bond during his final 2 years. Recently, I went out to dinner on what would have been his 79th birthday, and the restaurant happened to play End of the Line by the Traveling Wilburys, my dad's self-declared end-of-life theme song. I felt his presence in that moment, and it reminded me how important music is for processing grief. So thank you for that. And I apologize to everybody we didn't get to, a very popular topic today. And thank you to our guests, Kate Beaver with Maine Music and Health, and Dan Wenger with Midcoast Music Academy, both also musicians and music therapists. Today's sound engineer, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.